The following is a presentation of Remnant. I am reaching from the depths of my soul. Hear me pleading. I'm a child, I'm a poor, I am needed. To the throne of your virtue, believing.
Hi, this is Jerry Godsey, co-pastor of Remnant. Remnant was begun with one goal, to touch people with God's incredible love. My prayer is that this study will comfort you, challenge you, and bring you one step closer to being the person God wants you to be. If this study is helpful or if you need more information, please drop me a line at jerry@remnantchurchonline.com. God bless you, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to a message from Pastor Jerry Godsey.
Let's talk about God's big gamble. And you know what? If you look at this with your eyes, this whole idea of Jesus coming to earth is the craziest idea ever thought of. It doesn't make any sense. The King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, is going to be born in this huge palace. No, he's going to be born in a scooped out hillside somewhere. Gotcha. The first people to hear the message, they're going to be the high power people, the movers and shakers of society. No, it's going to be a bunch of smelly shepherds. God didn't do anything the right way here, by the way we look at it. That's where we get to that whole idea of God's ways are higher than our ways. We can't understand what God does. I was talking to my neighbor the other day and talking about some stuff, and I said, you know what? I would be frightened to have a God that I fully understood. Why would you want a God that you understood everything about him? Oh, I know exactly why God does that. Really? You're that good? And so I listened to these theologians talk, and my two nephews and I had some conversation yesterday about some issues, and I said, you know, the bottom line is God is a great box breaker. We put God in this little box, and we say, this is the way God works, this is the way God does things, and that's it. And then God comes along with this big hammer and says, nah, you don't even know what you're talking about. I don't want a God that I fully understand. I don't want a God that I can look at everything he does and say, oh, I know exactly why you did that. No, I want mystery. I want a God that is so great that all I can do is stand back and say, wow, I wouldn't have thought of doing it that way. All right. And thankfully, that's the God we serve. The title for today is Full House. Thankfully, not after the TV series, which... For some reason, when my grandson was here, we took him to Burger King. For some reason, every time we went to Burger King up by the mall, Full House is playing on the television. I think they see me coming. But quick, Godsey's coming in, put on Full House. Because we know he hates it. Here are the hashtags and stuff for today. We encourage you to tweet the message at Remnant. If you're here and you've got a Twitter feed or a Facebook page, post it. Because we want everybody to know what's going on here. Let's look at Luke chapter 2, verse 7. Very, very short scripture today. She gave birth to her firstborn, a son. She wrapped him in cloths and placed him in a manger because there was no room for them in the inn. It's a story we're familiar with. Even people who don't come to church probably know the story of the birth in the stable. If nothing else, they walk by and seen nativity scenes. There's a great story about a Jewish family, and the grandparents come over from the old country, and they're immigrants, and the younger people are trying to explain to them all about America and how America works. And so one of the things they took them to the Museum of Modern Art, and there they see this big painting of the nativity scene. There's the baby Jesus and the mom and dad, the wise men are there, the shepherds are there, all there. And so the older man looks, and he says, he points to the Joseph in the picture, he says, is this the papa? And they said, yes, that's the papa. Looks at the mom. Is this the mama? Yeah, that's the mom. And it's the baby? It's the baby. What's with all the cows and donkeys? And the daughter says, well, he was born in a stable. There wasn't any room for them. They couldn't get a room at the inn, so he was born in a stable. And the grandpa just says, Gentiles. Not enough room for an inn, but they posed for a picture. I And we hear the story and we think, you know, they couldn't make room for Jesus. They didn't know who Jesus was. Understand, the Jews were looking for a conquering hero. The Jews were looking for somebody to come riding in on a white horse, guns blazing, and to free them from the tyranny of the Romans. They weren't looking for some baby born to some young girl, some guy riding on a donkey. That's way outside what they were expecting. That's what they got. And so it kind of set the tone for Jesus' life, because all through Jesus' life, even to today, we have trouble finding room for him. They had trouble finding room for him as he was growing up. They didn't like some of the things he said. They crowded him out all through history. Think about it. She brought forth her firstborn son, wrapped him in clothes, and laid him in a manger. It's the most famous hotel in all of history. But we didn't have room for him. And before you judge that innkeeper too harshly, I want to know how much room you have for Jesus today. How quick are you to make room for him? And I know, we're all here in church. We have the Sunday school answer. Well, yes, Jerry, I give room in all of my heart for Jesus. I open up my heart. Lord, come in, please. Really? Really? Or do we hold back? Do we ask Jesus to come into our heart and our life, and yet we hold things away from him? Yeah, Lord, you can have all my life, but not this part, because I really need to hold on to right here. God, I want all of you, but I don't really want you to have all of me. We're good at that. Why is that? I've got a couple of reasons for you. First of all, it's because we're preoccupied. Jesus was shut out because the people were preoccupied. Now, everybody's traveling. They had caused a census to happen, like just like then, just like now. The government got to get paid, so they had to travel to the place of their forefathers. Joseph had to go to Bethlehem. It's a long journey. It's not like you could get on Amtrak or Israeli track or whatever they had back then. I don't know. They didn't have anything back then. You got on a donkey and you just took off. You ever tried to make a donkey go somewhere? It's not easy. And Joseph's walking. Mary's pregnant. You know, I like the Bible says she was great with child. Yeah, I guess so. She's about ready to pop. When Lynette had our first child, there the last, you know, month or so, she would just stand in the kitchen and scream, "Get out of here!" And I thought she was yelling at me, because that's usually the way she did. No, she was yelling at the baby. She didn't want to have the baby anymore in here. Go away! When Christopher was born, we were driving to the hospital, and she looked over at me. She had a big labor pain. She looked over at me, and she said, "Right now, I just want to slap Eve." Because it was Eve's sin that caused for women to be born in pain, for labor to hurt. So, and she meant it with every fiber of her being. There was no doubt in my mind that she would have laid hands on Eve and forgotten to pray. They're traveling, it's a long distance, and they stop to rest, but there's so many people traveling and so few hotels on the road. I mean, it's not like Motel 6. They didn't leave light on for them. There was no room for them. So they got there, and every place was taken. And we all want to look at the innkeeper, the guy who ran the hotel, and say, "Dude, you messed up. There's Jesus being born out there, and you're letting him, you know, you're letting Mary just go through labor pains on the back of a donkey. What's wrong with you?" Or we get mad at the other people. "Wait a second, why didn't you give up your room?" Did any of them know who Jesus was going to be? Did any of them have any idea? No. They're preoccupied. They had their own stuff to deal with. If anything, the innkeeper's kind of a hero, because he made a room for them where he didn't have room. He gave them a place. Jesus could have just as easily been born on the side of a road somewhere. Would have made a weird nativity scene. Wouldn't it? Like, you know, rocks and a road. And I think the manger was probably better. We get too busy, though. We get preoccupied with our daily lives. We go through all of this stuff every day, and we act like, you know, we're just going about the business, and we tell God we have room for him, I want you to stop and think about yesterday. How much time yesterday was God in your day? How much of your time yesterday was spent watching college football? Some good games yesterday. How much time was spent worshiping God? And I'm sorry, but praying that your team scores a touchdown is not worshiping God. Lord, bless Auburn right now, Lord. That doesn't count. Lord, smite Oklahoma. That doesn't count. How much of your day was spent with God? How many people did you have contact with yesterday that you had a chance to minister to, but you were too busy? See, we get preoccupied too, don't we? We get busy with stuff. And we tell ourselves it's important stuff. Look, in the ministry, you can get so busy taking care of stuff that you forget that you're doing all this for people. Been there, done that. It's so easy for us. You know, we come here on Sunday morning and everybody's setting up and we're doing stuff. And then as soon as church is over, we start tearing stuff down. And it's easy for me to forget that I'm one of the pastors and people may need to talk to me. So focused on getting stuff done. In Luke chapter 10, Mary and Martha are getting ready, and Jesus is at their house, and Mary is just spending time with Jesus. She's doting on Jesus and, you know, getting him iced tea, and, you know, she's taking care of him, and Martha's in there cooking and cleaning, and you can almost sense the frustration of Martha as she goes. You ever feel like you're the only one doing anything? I've got to do all this stuff, and she's in there just sitting around, and then the pots get banged a little louder. Yeah, I really could use some help in here. You know, finally, Jesus in chapter 10, verse 41, Jesus says, "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you're upset. You're worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, and indeed only one. Mary has chosen what's better, and it will not be taken away from her." Hey, Martha, take a chill pill. We can eat later. Right now, let's take advantage of the moments we have. Right now, let's do something that's really important. How many times in our day has God wanted to stop us and say, "I know what you're doing. I know you think what you're doing is important, but it's not." Chuck Swindoll talks about the tyranny of the urgent. Now, the urgent stuff gets in our way of the important things. You're working on a report for your boss. You've got to have it for a meeting or something. And then the phone rings. You stop and you answer the phone. That's the tyranny of the urgent. The phone ringing took you away from what was really important. And usually most phone calls to me are not that vital. They're not. We lose our focus on God because we get caught up in the things that we see around us. I came across a poem with an innkeeper, and it says, "I only did what you have done 1,000 times or more. When Joseph came to Bethlehem and knocked upon my door, I did not turn the Christ away or leave him there bereft. Like you, I only gave to him whatever I had left." How much of our lives is spent just giving God what's left? You know, how much of my day is spent and then I give Lynette whatever's left over? When really, shouldn't my wife be the most important thing to me? Shouldn't God be more important than her? Second reason is that we're insensitive. One of the reasons that there wasn't any room for them is that nobody recognized the importance of the moment. If that innkeeper had known for 1 second that that little baby was going to be so important that we would separate history based on his life, before Christ, after life, after death, don't you think he would have stopped for a second Wait a second. This is an important dude. I'm going to give him my best room. In fact, I'll give him my bed. He can have my own room. But he wasn't sensitive to what was going on. He was busy. A lot of stuff going on. There's a poem called "The Inn That Missed Its Chance," and I didn't put it on the board. It says, "How could I know that they were so important, just the two, no servants, just a workman sort of man, leading a donkey, his wife thereon? I saw them not myself, but my servants must have driven them away. But had I seen them, how was I to know? There was a sign, so they say, but I had no time for stars. There were songs out on the hills, but how was I to hear amid the thousand clamors of an inn?" The innkeeper didn't know. And just like he didn't know, so often we don't know. As we go about our daily lives, we don't realize all the chances that we have to minister for God, all the places where God puts us in an opportunity to do something great for him. And you don't even know what it's going to be. We need to be spiritually sensitive. You pass by that person in the hallway at work, and you look at your papers, or you got something on your mind, you don't even interact with them, and maybe just a smile would have been all they needed right then. Could have changed their lives. Most of you know, I run the crime scene unit for the sheriff's office, and I think some of the saddest scenes we have to go to are the scenes where someone's taken their life. Because I always wonder who could have helped them before this happened. Who missed an opportunity to give them just the right word? Who missed an opportunity to stand up and say, "Hey, you know what? You're important. I don't know what's going on in your life, but I want you to know that I care about you and that you're important to me." And that's what haunts me at those scenes. The physical act of it, all the stuff that goes with it, that stuff never bothers me. What bothers me on a scene like that is the cries of the people as I walk in the door. The family members who are grieving and trying to figure out what happened. Those cries, I still hear them. I'll pass by houses that I know I did a scene at, and I will hear the noises in my head. It's horrible. And I'll look at that house, and I'll think about the person. What was missing? What could I have done? Did I know somebody that knew them that I could have encouraged? Did I know them? I've had to go to a couple scenes where I knew the people. How many times do we have these divine appointments, these opportunities to be spiritually sensitive to God, and we miss them? And maybe it's not that dramatic. Maybe it's not that they're going to take their life. Maybe it was just their heart was ready to move closer to accepting Christ, or they were ready to accept Christ. See, that's our job. We're supposed to just be ready. We need to be like little guided missiles working our way to, you know, find the next person that Christ puts in our path. You don't have to preach to millions. You don't have to change the world. You just have to change the part of the world that rubs up against you. I'm never going to go to Zimbabwe and be a missionary, I don't think. I hope. I don't want to go there. Now God's going to make me a missionary, watch. Because God has a sense of humor, trust me. That's not, I don't want to do that. God's going to put that on somebody's heart and send them. Great. But I'll tell you where my mission field is. It's right here, right now. Tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock, it's the sheriff's office. It's everybody I come in contact with at work. It's everybody I come in contact with on all the places I write for. I write for a blog called The Blog of Manly, and I have my own website, and I do some other stuff. Every time I get a chance to do something like that, that's a place where I get a chance to change lives, to be part of God changing lives. I can do my part. Maybe it's small. Maybe it's big. It doesn't matter. I just need to be spiritually sensitive to what God is doing. I like this verse in Deuteronomy chapter 29. You've seen with your own eyes everything the Lord did in the land of Egypt to Pharaoh and to all his servants, to all his whole country, and all the great tests of strength, the miraculous signs, and the amazing wonders. But to this day, the Lord has not given you minds that understand, nor eyes that see, nor ears that hear. Think about all the things that Jesus, that God did that night. There was the star and the choirs talking to the smelly shepherds. And the shepherds running through town like nut jobs. There's something really cool going on out here. Check it out. And they all missed it. The innkeeper didn't have any idea. All of a sudden, shepherds are in his stable talking to this couple. And he never stopped and said, you know, I need to go out and see what's going on out there. Too busy. Too insensitive. The lowly things are often the holy things. When you think of it, almost every great thing that we know has come that way. Born in a sorry place, often rejected and shut out with only a few wise men, with insight to see the glory there. We need trained and receptive hearts to recognize God when he comes knocking on our door. I guarantee you tomorrow, you've got a divine appointment. And it's not going to be what you think it is. I wrote a column about it. I told you before about when I was a youth pastor in Beaumont, I'm going through Alpha Beta, and I passed by this lady just crying by the fish sticks. Now, fish sticks don't normally affect people like that. I didn't know if maybe she, you know, maybe her goldfish died that week and she was like, oh, the fish sticks are here. But I passed her. And as soon as I passed her, I felt that tugging of God. Hey, you need to go talk to that lady. Yeah, but Lord, she's by the fish sticks. That's just not a good place. Every aisle I went down, here came this lady just blubbering. Like, lady, suck it up. Come on. She's crying. And I start making deals with God. Okay, God, you know, I'll give her my card. I'm the youth pastor at Beaumont First Assembly. Here, God bless you. Call me if you need me. That's not going to work. And Lord, I'll follow her out to the car. Well, then she's just going to think I'm a stalker. I might get pepper sprayed or something. Finally, right there by the Wonder Bread. True story. I think because I wonder why it took me so long to finally do it. Right there by the Wonder Bread, I went to her and I said, you know what, ma'am, I'm the youth pastor at the local church. Can I pray with you about something? She's like, oh, I'd like that, please. So I pray with her. Immediately she drops to her knees, gives her heart to the Lord. She's a missionary to the Fijis right now. That's not true. That's what I expected. God kept kicking my behind, you know, but the lady by the fish sticks, and finally I get her by the Wonder Bread, and I said, you know, ma'am, I'm a youth pastor at a local church. Can I pray with you? I'd like that. And I pray with her, and that's it. I never saw her again. Now, if I'd gotten her earlier by the fish sticks, who knows? Fiji might have had another missionary, maybe, because I waited by the Wonder Bread. She just, you know, I don't know. Here's the thing, though. I was spiritually insensitive. I mean, I knew what was going on. I just didn't want to do it. And to this day, I have no idea what happened in that lady's life. And you know what? That's not important. That's not my job. My job is to be obedient. Some people water the plant. Some people plant the seed. Some people water it. Some people weed the garden. And some people reap the harvest. That day, well, I'm probably just cutting weeds. And you know what? That's okay. Important thing for us is to recognize when God knocks on our door. When God looks at us and says, you're up. You ever been second string in a sport? Maybe third or 12th string? And you stand there by the coach? Every time the coach moves, you stand, you move with him? I think he's limping, coach. You need me to go in? Go away, Godsey. But then there's that great number, That great time when the coach calls your number. Gotsy, get in there. Oh, somebody's going to die now. And then you do something stupid and he calls you back off. You heard the name Wally Pipp? Baseball guys know Wally Pipp. Wally Pipp was the first baseman for the New York Yankees. Got drunk one night. Showed up with a hangover to the game the next day. Told the coach, I'm sick. I don't think I can play. Coach said, okay. They put in a second stringer. A guy you might have heard of named Lou Gehrig. Wally Pipp never played another game for the Yankees. God's waiting for you to step up for your Lou Gehrig moment. God's waiting for you to step up. He's going to call your number tomorrow. You going to answer? Third reason is that we're inhospitable. Ouch. I don't have the gift of hospitality necessarily. There are some people like you know, Karen Hines that we put on these dinners and it's all this stuff. When I was a youth pastor, I kid you not, when I was a youth pastor, we put on this dinner, I forgot plates. And the kids are like, Jerry, with no plates. All right, eat with your hands. We had like potato salad and stuff. Well, hold your hand out. You know, God give you hands. Think people are like in, you know, the think people in the jungle have plates? They just stick their hand out and eat stuff. Shut up. Whining. See, there's something else going on here. It's not just preoccupation, and it's not just not knowing what's going on. It's inhospitality. There were people in Christ's day who looked him over, listened to him. When they sensed what he was saying, they said, no thanks, not for me. There was no room in the synagogue at Nazareth, so they kicked him out. His message that all people were the same before God, they didn't have time for that. There wasn't any room in the temple. You can't overturn the sales tables of the chief priest's family and expect to have the hospitality of those who are in power. No room in Israel. Certainly not for his subversive talk. See, because remember, they were looking for a conquering hero. And here came Jesus saying things like, give Caesar what Caesar's, give God what God's. You going to overthrow the government? No. I'm going to make a new government. One that's based on God's principles. One that's based on turning the other cheek. If the soldier comes to you and says, here, carry my coat for a mile, which was Roman law, they had to do it. Don't just go 1 mile, go two. And don't do it out of spite. Do it with a smile on your face, and when you're done, tell them thanks. They weren't ready for that. They didn't want to hear that. And so today, when God comes to us and says, hey, take up your cross and follow me, we don't want to hear that. When he tells us, love those who are ugly to you, we've got no time for that. When he says, forgive those who have hurt you, that hurts. Make no mistake about it. The thing that has always bothered me is when people say that Christianity is for wimps. What are you, nuts? It's not wimpy to forgive the person that's hurt you the most. In fact, it takes all the strength you can muster. It's not wimpy to do the right thing when everyone else is doing the wrong thing. Strength of character. There were people in Jesus' day called zealots that thought that the only way to get rid of the Romans was to fight, to resist, to urge, to kill them. There is a big thing among theologians that Judas was a zealot. And that maybe one of the reasons that he sold Jesus out was to force Jesus' hand so Jesus would finally have to become the conquering hero that he knew he would be. It's a very interesting theory. That the reason Judas sold Jesus out was just to finally make him step up and conquer the Romans. Didn't work that way. Well, it did. Just took longer than Judas thought. Jesus saw through the power, the problem of power and passion. He knew that hatred wasn't a proper solution. You got to love people, even your enemy. He tells us that today. John chapter 1, verse 9 through 11 says, "The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. He was in the world, though the world was made through him. The world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him." See, there wasn't any room for his kind. Is there room in your heart for his kind? Is there room in your life for a commandment that says, oh, by the way, that person that hurt you so bad, you need to forgive them and love them? Over and over and over again. When I deal with couples come to me and say, hey, you know, Pastor, can you help us? When it gets down to forgiveness, that's always the hardest part because nobody wants to forgive. Well, you don't know what he did. You know what? You're right. I do know it doesn't matter. What? What has your spouse done to you that's worth going to hell over? Unforgiveness is like drinking poison and waiting for the other person to die. And yet we do it all the time. We've got to be about the master's business. And we can't do that carrying this huge 100-pound pack on our neck of unforgiveness and hatred and all these things. And look, I got pain. I got problems. You got problems. All God's children got problems. The greatest step of freedom in my life was when I forgave my dad. I hated him. Split up our home. All kinds of horrible stuff. I hated that man. Hated him with a passion. And I was the one who suffered because of it. I was the one who was angry. I was the one who lashed out. I was the one who did stupid things. And the key to my life, the reason I stand here right now, is because I got to a place where I had to forgive. It was time to put up or shut up. And some of you are at that point right this moment. God's telling you, it's time. You've been dealing with this for too long. You've been waiting for the other person to die. And they're not going to. You're the one drinking the poison. You're the one with the stomachache. You're the one who's unhappy. You're the one who's miserable. You're the one who's hurting. Is it really worth that? No. We don't want that message, though. We don't want to hear that. We want to hear that God understands why we're angry and he's angry too. When you start talking about forgiveness in churches, man, you get glares. Well, Pastor, I'm not going to forgive that guy. All right, fine. Go to hell. Let me explain that. I love doing that because then they're like, oh, Pastor cussed in church. No. Jesus said, if you don't forgive men when they sin against you, you won't be forgiven by God. Okay, so I'm going to be mad at you and I'm going to put myself, because I know that I need forgiveness. So if God's not going to forgive me when I sin because I'm not forgiving you, I'm going to forgive you because I need to get straight. I'm going to forgive you because I know what I do. I know that at any moment I'm going to need God's forgiveness because I got priors. I got a track record. The late David Roberts said that if he could have anticipated Bethlehem, he would have stood at the stable and yelled at Jesus, "Oh, gentle Son of God, don't come here. Don't come into such a world. There's no place for you. There's no place for someone who cares nothing for money, prestige, or power. You don't fit in here. It'll destroy you. Don't come. You don't belong." I wonder if that could be said of our hearts. I wonder if somebody could see our hearts they would yell at Jesus, don't go there. You don't belong. They're not ready for you. They don't want to love you unconditionally. They don't want to take the steps that it takes to follow you, God. Don't go there. We need to quit fooling ourselves with the thought that we can go on year after year just being busy and then at one great moment of our own choosing, find the room for Christ. No, we never find room. We must make room.
Listen, if I'd known then what I know now, there would have been room in my inn. Oy vey, I would have given up my own bed. But I didn't know. How could I know, right? Now, Bethlehem was so full of people. I mean, the government, they made everybody in the world go back to the hometown and register. You know, government has to have the money. And since nobody wants to stay with the in-laws, I'm full. I remember that day. We were full before dinner time. And now it's 2-3 hours after dinner when they show up. Talk about desperate. He was exhausted and scared. And she was about to burst. And as they're approaching my place, I'm thinking in my head, I know what I'll say to them. I'll say, I'm sorry, we don't have room. But by the time they get there, they just stand for a minute, gather their thoughts. He looks down, he's thinking. I notice she winces ever so slightly in pain. And he looks at me, and he says, please. That's all he said. Please. Let me tell you a story. I'm 5 years old, right? I'm helping my mother set the table. I noticed that she has one too many plates. So I say to her, Ma, you got one too many plates. You know, and she says back to me, you never know who may show up. I look at her like, what? She walks over to me. She says, you never know who God may bring your way. You always make room. So, I look back at the couple, and I say to them, I don't know where we'll put you, but we'll make room for you. And we did. It wasn't the nicest room, but it's all I had to give them. Mom was right. You always make room.
This morning, God's not looking for the nicest place in town. He's not looking for a palace. He's just looking for you to make room. I am reaching
from the depths of my soul. You've been listening to a presentation of Remnant. For more information, visit us at remnantchurchonline.com.